This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Last month, the Human Rights Watch released a report on the practice of child labour in Indonesia's tobacco farms. According to this report, both Indonesian and multinational tobacco companies are not doing enough to ensure that children are free from hazardous work. This includes having children work in conditions which pose serious health and safety risks. However, the International Labour Organization, or ILO, reported in 2013 that there has been a 46% decrease in the use of child labour worldwide. Half of the 168 million children happen to be in the Asia and Pacific region. That translates to 1 in 10 children involved in child labour. Simran Singh, the senior specialist on child labour at the ILO, explains the various sectors practicing this.
The sector that harbors the most child labor by far is in agriculture. And agriculture, I mean also forestry and fisheries. That tends to prevail around 60% or so of the children that are intended to be in agriculture. Children are subject to not only long hours, but falls, breaks from rocks, snake bites while in the field, mishaps with farm equipment that's not been guarded, exposure to pesticides. The list can go on and on. So agriculture is actually one of the most dangerous sectors. But that's not to say that the work that they do in the second most prevalent form, which is in the manufacturing sector, especially in Asia, working in factory settings or even in small enterprises that are out of the sight of authorities, and many of them are working in informal sector enterprises with no labor condition controls. And that's followed then by the third most prevalent, which is in the service sector. And here you have children working, for example, in bars, in nightclubs, in restaurants, and they're exposed to clients that might be quite abusive, for example, and not under supervision.
Other examples of child labour practices include the sugarcane sector in the Philippines, the garment supply chain in Cambodia, and children are also seen serving tea at stalls in Myanmar. Selvi Supramaniam is the child protection specialist at UNICEF Malaysia. She explains why child labour continues to exist in this day and age.
It continues to exist as long as children are born in poverty, grow up in vulnerable and difficult situations, they face discrimination, unable to stay in school or access even education, or have no access to other options or opportunities to survive and thrive. For example, children from indigenous groups or lower castes are more likely to drop out of school to work. Migrant and refugee children are also vulnerable to hidden and illicit labor. Undocumented children are also forced to work earlier in life due to lack of opportunity.
Child laborers are often seen working in most stages of the supply chains. Based on the ILO report, companies use supply chains that are multi-layered and complex, making it difficult to track the use of child labour. Simran states that this issue of child labour in the global supply chain will be addressed in this year's World Day Against Child Labour.
In the year 2013, the number of jobs in global supply chains was about 453 million jobs. We would probably say that that could be an underestimate. I think there's also quite a lot of awareness on the part of many governments, for example, in importing countries that are more and more realizing that the products that might be reaching through trade their supermarket shelves in Europe or in the United States, for example, might actually have inputs that were made with child labor or other forms that we consider unacceptable for even adult workers. And the more we look into these different tiers in supply chains, we find that the poorest working conditions, including child labor, are found in the lowest tier, where you really need a lot more low-skilled and unskilled workers, and that type of work is more relegated to those that aren't well-educated, and also at wages that might not be necessarily very high, and by children.
In Malaysia, stateless children are the most vulnerable to exploitation due to their lack of documentation. James Nyagam is the chairman of the Suriana Welfare Society for Children. He illustrates the condition of child labour in Malaysia.
In comparison, say, over a period of 10, 20 years, we have seen that the cases have evolved. Back then, I used to deal with cases of local children being involved in child labour. But with the influx of migrant community as well as refugee community, there is now an increase of stateless, undocumented children coming into the picture where child labor is concerned. So today's context, when we discuss child labor, we are discussing migrant children and refugee children.
Despite that, Malaysia has adopted legislation and placed severe restrictions on the employment of children in the country. Selvi explains the legislations which are in place.
Malaysia currently has legislation on children working. The Principal Act, which applies in Peninsula Malaysia, is the Children and Young Persons Employment Act of 1966, which was subsequently amended in 2010. For Sabah and Sarawak, they have similar ordinances governing employment of children and young persons. So the Children and Young Persons Employment Act basically stipulates minimum working age and working conditions for young people. But the Act actually defines a child as any person who has not completed his or her 15th year, and a young person as any person who, not being a child, has not completed his 18th year of age. So the definition of the child in this Act, however, is not consistent with the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which Malaysia has ratified, nor is it consistent with the Child Act.
However, this is only applicable to local children. James suggests that stateless children in the country should be given equal rights.
The Child Act seemed to have been provided protection for the local Malaysian child. Whereas where it comes to foreign children who are involved in labour, there is a reservation in applying domestic laws to protect them. I've yet to see in any case where the authorities have actually applied the Child Act to protect a child where it involves a migrant child or child labour issues. So the matter of perception is these are foreigners and therefore they probably will be dealt under the Immigration Act and therefore the treatment is rather different. Whether there's an emphasis and there's a concentration to deal with child labour where it involves migrant workers, I have yet to see an effective mechanism to do that.
Unfortunately, existing international standards related to businesses and child labour are only voluntary and not legally binding. Simrin explains how the ILO ensures companies comply with the guiding principles.
We work quite closely with employers' groups as well as with private sector associations that are interested and keen and willing and motivated to take action against this. We have set up what we call a child labour platform for private sector to join and learn from each other as to how can they deal with child labour in supply chains precisely. They have been talking, for example, about how to deal with child labour in cocoa, and there's scope going into the future that the platform will also engage employers to talk more collectively about the fishing and seafood sector. That being said, even at country level where we operate, we do engage with businesses, but also those that they are supplying to, because they are part of that supply chain. It's important that all actors along the supply chain practice due diligence, and I think everyone has to recognize how connected this is and how at the different levels each one can play in making sure that child labor is not part of those supply chains. Our philosophy is that with good working conditions, and I mean, it's not just a philosophy. Our work has proven that with good working conditions, with equal remuneration, enterprises actually prosper. And if they can collectively come together to deal with some of these issues, their profits do increase.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.